Chapter 24 The Stolen Bison. I climbed into the RV to see the bison for myself. The RV had been designed to maximize the interior space. There were two sitting areas behind the driver's seat, followed by a bathroom and a kitchenette with a small gap between them, and a pull-out bed at the rear. Under normal circumstances, it might have been somewhat roomy. But with six people gathered in the sitting area, it was quite cramped. Plus, there was a year-old American bison inside. He looked to be somewhere around 500 pounds, and had started to develop the shaggy hump around his shoulders, so his bulk left him wedged between the bathroom door and the kitchenette, with barely an inch to spare on either side. His dark beard was still thin and patchy, which made him look vaguely like a teenage boy who had just started sprouting facial hair. He was facing us and was understandably agitated, given that he had recently been stolen, placed in an unfamiliar setting, and involved in a traffic accident. The RV was an older model and thus had lots of wear and tear that had come with years of use. Rips in the upholstery, scuffs on the tabletop, a dripping kitchen faucet. But there was also some unusual damage that indicated that more than one young bison had been transported in the RV. Gashes in the linoleum floor where hooves had pawed it, a badly dented bathroom door, and a series of holes gouged in the cabinetry by horns. It also stank, indicating that several, if not all, of the illegally obtained bison had relieved themselves on the floor. The one we were facing now definitely had. A fresh pile of bison poo sat by the pull-out bed, and there was a small lake of urine as well. A lasso lay coiled on the small table in the sitting area, attesting to how Jericho had caught the young bison. Still, I figured he must have needed every ounce of his strength to drag it into the vehicle. There was something extremely bizarre about seeing a bison in an RV. He looked completely incongruous, jammed between the bathroom and the kitchenette, as though some alien race had beamed him there by mistake. "We need to get him out of here," Summer said, concerned. "He looks scared." "Or should we take him back home?" Mom asked. "He ought to be returned to his herd." "How would we even know where that is?" Dad asked. "He could have been taken from anywhere in Yellowstone." The door suddenly locked automatically behind me as JJ started the RV. He put it in reverse and stomped on the gas. "Actually," he said, "our priority is still getting to the creeks before they split with my sapphire." The engine whined as it strained to pull the RV back onto the road. The rear tire spun and screeched on the asphalt. "Daddy," Summer exclaimed, "what about the poor bison?" "I'll take him right back after we get my jewels." JJ pressed down on the gas pedal with all his might. The tires finally found purchase, and the RV lurched backward violently. All of us tumbled into the various seats in the sitting areas. The bison wobbled, banging into the bathroom door, and bawled in alarm. The small lake of urine sloshed about. The RV shot backward through the intersection, flattened a stop sign, and then smashed into the Krautheimer's SUV, knocking it onto its side. Sidney gave a whimper of dismay. "Don't worry," JJ told him. "I'll get you a new one." He threw the RV into drive with a grinding of gears, and we sped into West Yellowstone. The RV hadn't been in great shape before the accident, but now it coughed and wheezed as though it only had a few miles left in it. The front end was crushed, and the windshield was cracked from the run-in with the tree, and now smoke billowed from the engine. All of us buckled into our seats and kept a wary eye on the bison. Not used to being in a moving vehicle, he was struggling to stay upright, his hooves skidding on the urine-slicked linoleum floor. Mom turned to me, looking as if something I said before had suddenly sunk in.
"Teddy, how did you know there would be a bison in here?"
I'd been trying to figure out how someone could move bison out of Yellowstone without drawing attention, I said, and then it occurred to me that an RV would be perfect. Hundreds of them pass through the park every day, and they're obviously big enough to hold a bison.
I nodded toward the one in the back, which was wobbling unsteadily due to JJ's driving. I saw this same RV leaving the park early yesterday morning, which is a strange time to be going out. And Evan found RV tire tracks on the road to the Spooners yesterday, although he figured it was a lost tourist at the time. "So you figured Jericho was stealing the bison?" Dad asked. "Actually, I thought it was the Spooners. They must be paying him to do their dirty work. Last night at the rodeo, I overheard Ike starting to tell George Wiley about a new bison he'd got. Or I started to overhear it, but then Taffy released grievous bodily harm from the chute to try to get me out of the picture."
"Now you're accusing Taffy of murder?" Sydney exclaimed. "She's no killer."
"I don't think she was trying to kill me," I said, "but she was right by the chute when the bull got out. She must have realized I was eavesdropping on Ike and decided to do something about it."
"I don't believe it," Sydney said, shaking his head. "That can't be true."
"Sure seems true to me," JJ exclaimed. "We found the foreman of their ranch driving an RV with a stolen bison in it. Case closed."
He glanced at me in the rearview mirror.
"Two mysteries solved in one morning, Teddy. You earned every cent of your fee on this one."
Summer had been beaming at me proudly up until that moment, but now her smile suddenly became a frown.
"Hold on. Daddy was paying you to investigate this case?"
I said weakly. "Not the bison rustling, only the stolen jewels."
"You told me you were investigating on your own."
At the same time, JJ also got upset with me. He wheeled around in the front seat and asked,
"You told Summer about the investigation?"
"JJ,"
Candace exclaimed,
"watch where you're going."
JJ returned his attention to the road ahead, just in time to avoid plowing into a car from behind. He swerved around it, sideswiping a stop sign, which toppled like a felled tree.
"We're not supposed to keep secrets from each other," Summer told me angrily, "even if other people ask us to."
"Summer," JJ said, "it's really not his fault."
"You keep out of this," she snapped. "I'm already angry enough with you, bear hunter."
We were passing straight through West Yellowstone, which had been a pleasant, peaceful little town until our arrival. It wasn't very big, but there was already a decent amount of traffic, as tourists got an early start on the day. The parking lots of diners were filling up, and families were leaving motels for the park. JJ wove through all the cars while the RV's engine clanked and belched smoke. We all had to hold on to keep from being thrown from our seats. The bison was growing more and more unsettled as the RV trembled around him. He lowered his head and gouged a groove in the kitchen cabinets with the tip of his left horn.
"JJ," Mom said, growing concerned, "could you drive more carefully? You're upsetting the bison."
"We're almost there," Sydney announced. "The Creek's place is just a few blocks ahead."
He pointed out the front windshield, but I couldn't see much through the curtain of smoke. I suddenly realized there was still some important information I hadn't shared about the necklace. I had started to say it a few minutes earlier, but then had been distracted by the RV.
"Oh, there's something you all need to know about the Creeks."
"Great," Summer said angrily. "There's something else you discovered without asking for my help?"
"Yes," I admitted. "I don't think they took the necklace for the money. Not exactly. I think they were trying to right a wrong."
"How's that?"
JJ took a corner too close, jumped the curb, and sent a garbage can skidding across the sidewalk. We all jounced in our seats. The bison lost his footing and smashed headlong into a cabinet, spearing the door with his horn.
"You bought that sapphire here in town, right?" I asked. "Off a local kid who found it on a reservation? And you kind of scammed him."
In the rearview mirror, I saw JJ's gaze narrow.
"I paid him a fair price," he said. "But only a fraction of what the sapphire was really worth," I said. "Who told you that?" JJ asked.
"I did," Candace said. "It's the truth and you know it, JJ."
JJ turned around angrily, intending to say something, but before he could, Sydney yelped,
"JJ, look out!"
Some pedestrians were stepping into a crosswalk ahead of us. JJ pounded on the horn and veered wildly. The RV jumped another curb and sheared a fire hydrant off the sidewalk, releasing a geyser of water. The right front tire blew out, and we skidded to a stop in the parking lot of an apartment complex. An upper kitchen cabinet burst open, releasing a cascade of pots and pans, which all clattered off the poor young bison's head. The bison reared his head back and bellowed, ripping off the cabinet door that was spiked on his horn, so the door now sat askew on his head, as though he was wearing a beret at a jaunty angle.
"We need to get out of the vehicle," Dad said. "Now."
He led the way, forcing the side door open so the rest of us could get out. Tourists were pouring out of diners and motels to see what had caused all the commotion. Several started taking selfies with the geyser of water erupting from the busted fire hydrant.
"Look at that, kids," one father exclaimed happily. "Now we don't have to bother driving all the way to see Old Faithful."
One tourist wasn't staring at the waterspout. He was staring at me. It was Morton. He gaped in horror when he saw me.
"No, stay away from me. Whenever you show up, some crazy animal comes after me."
"Morton," his wife chided, "don't be ridiculous."
At which point, the young bison charged out of the RV and into the street. He was in a foul mood now. He shook his head angrily, finally dislodging the cabinet door, which sailed through the window of a souvenir shop. Then he bellowed at the top of his lungs.
"See what I mean?" Morton screamed. "Run away!"
Having finally learned his lesson, he fled back into the safety of the diner. None of the other tourists followed his lead. In fact, several of them actually approached the bison, even though he was obviously upset, and started taking selfies with him. One dumb college kid came within only a few feet of the angry beast. Dad and Mom watched this behavior aghast. "Go with JJ," Mom told me. "We'll handle the Taurons." JJ was running across the intersection toward a small apartment complex. Sydney was by his side while Candace followed them. Summer stood between us and them, unsure what she should be doing. I ran over to her. "I'm sorry I didn't tell you the whole truth. I didn't know what the right thing to do was." Summer fell in behind me and we chased after her parents. "Being honest is always the right thing to do." "But your father asked me not to." "You could have told him no. We're a team, Teddy. We have to be straight with each other." "Okay, I will. From now on." Summer smiled, pleased that I had apologized, then glanced back toward my parents. "What are your folks doing?"
"Trying to talk some sense into the tourists." There was a bellow from the bison, followed by some screams of fear.
I glanced back to see a few Taurons fleeing from the young bull as he charged after them.
"Doesn't look like they're having much success," Summer observed.
"No," I agreed. "It doesn't."
The young bull caught up to the college kid who had been closest to him and deftly butted him through the front window of the diner. The RV burst into flames as its engine finally burned out. The sound of wailing sirens filled the air. Three local police cars screeched to a stop at the intersection. I saw my parents hurry over to them to explain what was going on. Ahead of us, Arturo Creek emerged from the front door of a first-floor apartment. He was already dressed for a day of work, and he looked much more concerned about the bison in the street than he did about J.J. McCracken bearing down on him.
"Morning," he said calmly. "What's going on?"
He obviously meant with the bison, but J.J. didn't take it that way. He was already winded after his short run, so he was gasping for breath as he responded,
"We know that your wife was hiding in the secret room two nights ago when the bear got in. Can we talk to her?"
"No," Arturo said. "Daisy left last night after work. She had some business back on the reservation."
"Business?" JJ repeated skeptically. "Did it have to do with my sapphire?"
Arturo looked him in the eye. He stayed calm, but there was a hint of anger in his voice.
That sapphire was never yours.
JJ now grew angry as well.
So, you admit she stole it?
You stole it first, from her nephew.
Stole it? I paid that kid for it.
Barely. And you're right. He was just a kid. He didn't know what he had, and you took advantage of him.
JJ started to argue, but Candace cut him off.
JJ, listen to what he has to say.
Behind us, the police were now trying to wrangle the bison. The RV was blazing. The fire department arrived to put it out. The crowd of gawkers was growing by the minute. Arturo continued.
Like most people on the reservation, Daisy's nephew had a rough life. The only break he ever caught was finding that sapphire, and you took it from him.
Daddy, Summer exclaimed, how could you do such a thing?
JJ gave her a wounded look.
I paid him more than he was asking, $500.
And how much is that sapphire actually worth?
Summer demanded.
$1 million?
More, I said. A lot more.
Summer glared at JJ. Candace looked ashamed, and JJ was suddenly at a rare loss for words.
Wait, he spluttered. Well, you see.
Arturo fixed him with a hard stare.
Daisy's nephew's name is Cade. He's a good man, but he's had a tough run. He's still living on the res, struggling to get by on what work he can find. And not a day goes by that he doesn't regret selling that rock to you. He didn't even know your name at first, just that you were some hotshot businessman who ripped him off. But over the years, Daisy and I put two and two together and realized it was you.
He shifted his gaze to Candace.
So, the other night, when we saw that you'd brought the stone back here, Daisy said the time had come to make things right.
He removed a large, bulky envelope from his jacket and held it out to JJ.
What's this?
JJ asked.
Open it, Arturo said.
JJ hesitated, so Candace took the envelope herself. She opened it and smiled. Then she lifted out the contents. It was the rest of the necklace, all the diamonds. Only the sapphire had been removed, and there was a wad of $20 bills inside.
How much is this? Candace asked.
Exactly what was paid for the stone in the first place.
Arturo shifted his gaze to JJ.
See? We didn't steal it. We're just getting it back to its rightful owner.
Daisy went to the res to take care of that, and I was on my way to bring this to you. Only, it looks like you figured things out on your own.
Teddy did,
Summer said proudly. He also figured out that Jericho's been stealing bison with that RV. She pointed to the charred wreckage in the street behind us. The police were now chasing the young bull in circles.
Oh, Arturo said. I was wondering what all that was about.
JJ didn't seem to know what to say. He still seemed upset, but he looked to Candace for guidance.
Keep the money,
she told Arturo, handing the envelope back. JJ turned to her aghast.
What? We don't need it, Candace said. And besides, the stone already paid off for you, she smiled. You got me with it.
And me too, Summer chimed in. It was the best investment you ever made.
In the intersection, a policeman managed to get a lasso around the horns of the young bull. Only the bull turned out to be a lot stronger than he'd expected. He took off down the street, dragging the policeman behind him like a dog sled, until the officer finally thought to let go of the rope. Arturo now shifted his attention to Sydney.
We didn't mean to lure Sasquatch into the house. That was an accident. And we're very sorry.
No,
Sydney said, looking ashamed.
That would never have happened if it wasn't for my meshuggah idea to lure the bear to the property. I should never have asked Daisy to do it.
She could have said no, Arturo said.
I said, sometimes when your boss asks you to do something,
It's hard to say no, even if you don't agree with it. Summer realized what I was really talking about and rolled her eyes. In the intersection, the firemen couldn't put the blazing RV out because the fire hydrant had been knocked off. They were struggling to cap the geyser first. The young bison was now eating the decorative flowers from the landscaping in front of the souvenir shop. Candace told Arturo,
"If Daisy's nephew wants a fair price for that sapphire, he should call us. If we don't buy it, we can put him in touch with people who can sell it for him at the right price."
Arturo smiled.
"Thanks. I'll let Daisy know."
He looked past us toward the chaos in the intersection.
"A lot of strange things have been happening since you people showed up."
"Oh, that's not us," Summer said. "That's Teddy. Chaos follows him wherever he goes."
"That's not true," I protested.
"It darn well is," JJ said.
"But you know what?" Summer asked me.
While the RV burned and the geyser spouted and the young bison eluded yet another attempt by the police to catch him, she slipped her hand into mine and grinned.
"I wouldn't have it any other way."